according to Matthew chapter 2.
Glory to you, O Lord.
After Jesus' birth, which happened in Bethlehem of Judea, during the reign of Herod, astrologers from the east arrived in Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the newborn ruler of the Jews? We observed his star at its rising and have come to pay homage." At this news, Herod became greatly disturbed, as did all of Jerusalem. Summoning all the chief priests and religious scholars of the people, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem of Judea," they informed him. "Here is what the prophet has written. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means the least among the leaders of Judah, since from you will come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." Herod called the astrologers aside and found out from them the exact time of the star's appearance. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, after having instructed them, "Go and get detailed information about the child. When you have found him, report back to me so that I may go and offer homage too." After their audience with the ruler, they set out. The star which they had observed at the rising went ahead of them until it came to a standstill over the place where the child lay. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and upon entering the house, found the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves and paid homage. Then they opened their coffers and presented the child with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They were warned in a dream not to return to Herod, so they went back to their own country by another route. The Gospel of Christ.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. So maybe it's because I've directed far too many Christmas pageants, but when I hear the story of the Magi visiting the baby Jesus, I don't really think of three kings at all. No visions of regal visitors decked out in their finest, riding atop camels, guided by a star, come to mind when I hear this story. What does come to mind are memories of little boys. Little boys decked out in colorful, shiny robes that threaten to trip them up, giggling and roughhousing with their cardboard crowns askew. And of all the little boy kings that I've tried to corral, one of them stands out from all the rest. Perhaps I remember him so well because he was so little that we couldn't get him to kneel in front of the manger for fear that he would disappear into the hay and our audience would only see two wise guys paying homage. Or maybe it was the speed with which he dashed in and out of the gang of shepherds who threatened to trip him up with their crooks. But I really think it was the ingenious way that he and his father solved the problem of his lost gold that makes me remember this little guy. Let's call him, for the purposes of this sermon, Jay. Jay stood out from all the other little boy kings that I have directed in all the Christmas pageants, too many to count, that I've been involved with. Little Jay's mother, like many mothers of kings in pageants, was responsible for creating a facsimile of the gift her particular wise guy would bestow upon the baby Jesus. Unlike some of the feeble efforts that I've seen over the years, Jay's gift of gold was a cut above the rest. Inside an elaborately carved box that his father had picked up on his travels in the Middle East, Jay's mother had placed upon a bed of golden satin a carefully created gold bullion made from a small piece of 2x4 that was wrapped in gold wrapping paper. It positively sparkled. And it must have impressed Jay because he was forever opening up his box to show his fellow cast members his treasure, as he called it. His treasure. "Do you want to see my treasure? It's here in my treasure chest." During the dress rehearsal, Jay's performance was perfect. He had perfected the art of gazing at the makeshift star in the sky, really, which hung above the altar, just a little east of the makeshift manger. And when he arrived at the place where the newborn baby Jesus, who just happened to be a little girl that year, Jay strode right up to the mother, opened the box containing his treasure, and proudly announced his gift of gold for the newborn king. Now they, whoever they are, say that if the rehearsal doesn't go well, then the performance will be wonderful. So I was more than a little worried when our dress rehearsal went off splendidly, because that could only mean one thing, and I wasn't looking forward to a performance where everything went wrong. Well, sure enough, unbeknownst to me, on the morning of his big performance, somewhere between his home and church, Jay lost his golden treasure. All he had was the chest, no gold inside, an empty box. And he came into the church wailing, found his father in the pew, and told him his sad story. "I have no gold for the king." Now this story reminds me of a story that Joan Chittister tells that I've told you before, and some of you heard a few weeks ago, heard Joan tell it herself. But like all good stories, it should be told over and over again. It's the story of a Sufi master who was found scratching in the sand in the middle of the road. "What are you doing?" some pilgrims asked the Sufi as they passed. And the old Sufi looked up and said, "I'm looking for my treasure. I've lost it." So the pilgrims, they were good people, so they dropped to their knees and began to help him look for his treasure. And they sifted the sand, and they dug under stones, and they sweat under the midday sun. Until finally hungry, soaking wet, and exhausted, one of the travelers asked the Sufi, "Sufi, are you sure that you lost your treasure here?" And the old man said, "Oh no. No, I didn't lose my treasure here. I lost it over there on the other side of the mountains." And the pilgrims looked at him in a kind of growing despair and said, "Well, if you lost it on the other side of the mountains, why in the name of Allah are you searching for it here?" And the old man said, "I'm looking for it here because there is more light here." So many of us find ourselves searching for lost treasures. We have been trained to expect that which we have lost to be exactly where we left it. It used to drive me nuts when I would go into the house and say to my mother, "I lost something." And she said, "Well, it's exactly where you left it." We are trained from a young age to expect that which we have lost to be exactly where we left it. And so we return to the place where we think we last held on to our treasure in order to search. The only problem is that all too often our treasure has moved, and our hopes of finding it right where we left it are nothing more than vain longings, because that treasure that we lost is no longer where we would expect to find it. Too many of us gaze up into the sky desperately seeking a star that will shed light, the light we need to illuminate our problems. But the light we need, the light that once worked for us, is not to be found up there in the sky. And even if it were to be found in a star, we need more than starlight to illumine our way. We need a more intense light, a brighter light than some far-off distant star, if we are to find our treasure. The treasure that will enable us to live our lives more fully alive. So we must return to the story and shift our gaze from the heavens and look more closely at the wise ones who traveled to greet the newborn Christ child. It's difficult for us to see past the star. We know the story so very well that it's almost impossible to find a new way of seeing. Think of most of the nativity scenes you've ever seen. And there are three kings, even though there's no evidence that there were three. And they're not named as kings, but rather magi, astrologers, scientists of the day. We assume, in our nativity sets, that they brought with them three gifts. Doesn't say that in the text. We usually picture them kneeling, offering their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I'd always thought of these wise guys carefully selecting their gifts before they even left Persia, packing them on their camels, bringing them along, taking them out, and walking into the stable and kneeling and offering their precious treasure. I mean, they've seen a star that portends the arrival of a newborn king, and they've stopped what they're doing, left their lives behind to follow this star. But what if they came without gifts? What if they didn't go off somewhere in Persia and find gold, frankincense, and myrrh for the specific purpose of giving it to this newborn king? I've done it before. I suspect some of you may have done it this past Christmas. You arrive at some event or another and you realize that you should have brought a gift. So you look around in your car or in your purse. You find something, anything to give. Sometimes on the way there you'll realize that you've got nothing with you, so you pull into a drugstore or a service station, and whatever you can find, whatever is handy, you find something, anything to give. Now, these three wise guys setting out on a long journey would, of course, brought along some treasures, if only to trade with the locals for the necessities of life. So what if it went down something like this? They'd arrived and there was this beautiful newborn child in which lay the hopes and dreams of a world gone mad with violence, greed, and lust for power. And this little child, they see hope in this child. They've just been to see Herod, remember? They know how evil the powers that be are. And here's this beautiful baby, this beautiful child, this hope for the future. It touches them, it moves them, it overwhelms them. The beauty of this child in the midst of the poverty and insanity of the world. And so they reach into their respective belongings. They reach into their treasures and they give what they had to this child. Generosity is born in these wise ones as a result of an encounter with the beauty of a newborn child. And so giving the most precious gift they have as a result of being overcome by hope for the future, filled with something other than what has always been. Little Jay was overcome with grief at the loss of his gold bullion. What could he do? There was no time to go home and make another one. The nativity play was going to be ruined. All was lost. He looked everywhere that he had been. He told his father he couldn't find his treasure anywhere. It wasn't where he left it. So Jay's dad did the only thing he could do. He dug down deep into his own treasure to find a gift for his son to give. And he opened up his wallet and he looked at the bills. Money. I'll give the kid a 20. That ought to do the trick. I mean, that's modern day gold, right? I'll give the kid a 20. But then he'll have to explain that and he'll never get it right. And then he saw it, the most precious treasure of all. It was a bit tattered from the time that it had spent in his wallet, but it was, after all, his most valuable treasure. So he put it in Jay's box and told him to give it to the baby Jesus. And when the time came, Jay bowed regally before the babe, and little Emma smiled up at him as he proudly lifted the lid of his beautifully carved box and offered up the treasure that lay inside. The audience could not see what I saw, but it was a treasure more valuable than gold. For nestled there upon a bed of golden satin was a slightly worn photograph of Jay. What gift could be more precious than the gift of oneself? We spend too much time looking to the heavens, convinced that our treasure lies there, waiting to be bestowed upon us by some king in the sky. The truth rests more securely, closer than we have ever imagined. Our treasure cannot be found looking to the heavens. Our treasure lies deep inside of our being. Our treasure lies waiting to be given to a world in need of such treasure. The treasures that we have to give. So shift your gaze from the heavens, for the light of the world shines forth from you. Look around you, and you will see the light of the world in your sisters and your brothers, in your neighbors. You are the light of the world. Shine forth, for the world has need of your treasure. You may not be prepared, you may not think you're ready, but deep within you lie the treasures this world needs, the treasures that creation is waiting for. The most profound words spoken in the entire nativity pageant are always these words: do not be afraid. Fear not. We've spent far too long looking into the heavens for treasure. The light is over here, and over here, and over here. It's in you, and in you, and in you, and in me. There's a quotation that has often been credited to Nelson Mandela, but that's sort of a fluke of Hollywood. He didn't actually say it. But it was written by a self-proclaimed spiritual activist, Marianne Williamson. It speaks of the world's need of our very selves. Williamson writes, "What holds us back in our lives is our fear. And sometimes, when you take a very close look, you find out that your fears aren't exactly what you thought they were. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. As we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So it's holy work to move past our own fear. It doesn't just help you, it helps the world." I suspect that Williamson's words speak so profoundly because we've all said to ourselves, Who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, or fabulous? Humility is all well and good, except when it gets in the way of generosity. So when you hear yourself saying to yourself, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Remember to say right back to yourself, actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. So fear not, dear ones. You are children of God. The treasure you seek to give lies not in the heavens, but here, deep inside. Open yourselves up and give the world the treasure creation needs. You are the light of the world. So shine. Amen.